33. Here are the numbers now. Wind northwest at 17, gusty to 25. 21 degrees Kenosha, 20 in Racine, wind chill minus 8. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. All of us watched with horror as wildfires tore through much of Southern California back in January. In the immediate wake of those fires, WGTD's news director Dave McGrath informed me that his nephew, Frank McGrath, lost his home in the so-called Eaton Fire, which destroyed most of the beautiful community of Altadena. With Dave's help, I reached out to Frank McGrath to see if he would be willing to tell the story of his family's ordeal, and he generously agreed. And I so appreciate the opportunity to hear firsthand about what he and so many Californians experienced in this horror. Just to give you some background, Frank McGrath was born in Milwaukee but raised in Deerfield, Illinois, and for the last 20 years or so he has lived and worked in California as a film editor, doing much of his work at home. His current gig is doing post-production work for the CBS game show Raid the Cage. His wife is Bridget, a teacher at a school in a nearby community, and they have a daughter, Maggie, who attends that school where her mother teaches. In this so-called Eaton Fire, roughly 80 to 90% of Altadena was utterly destroyed. Here is the story of what Frank McGrath and his family experienced. You have lived in Southern California for some time now, and of course, wildfires are a very familiar, sadly familiar, part of the landscape there, part of life there. And yet, of course, these fires in January were something different, unprecedented in some ways. Leading up to these fires, how close had you ever experienced California wildfires? Have you ever felt yourself where you lived under any kind of significant threat?
I have been close. Not that I felt I was threatened. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I lived in a neighborhood called Los Feliz, depending on how you pronounce it. And I lived in a back house of a friend who also is from Wisconsin. And that neighborhood butted up against Griffith Park, which is a huge, massive, amazing public park in the middle of Los Angeles. It's where the Griffith Park Observatory is. It's like LA's Central Park. There was a pretty big wildfire. I don't remember what year it was, but it was in my first two or three years in Griffith Park. Where our home in Altadena was the foothills up into the mountains. When I was in Los Feliz, that was more, we were just beneath the foothills. So one of those things where, like, we saw the fire, there was ash, but it wasn't necessarily scary. And it was in a pretty massive park. So I remember it was kind of like, it was an experience I've never had before. I remember that we were worried about the Griffith Park Observatory, which is a beautiful historic building. And a lot of people in the neighborhood were like, oh God, I hope that doesn't burn down. There was concern, like, those houses up in the hills there was certainly concern for that. But they were able to get control of that fire, you know. And the difference there with that fire and a lot of fires that I've heard about or witnessed from afar in Los Angeles, they didn't have 80 to 100 mile per hour winds. So they were able to do aerial drops on that kind of a fire. And it took a couple days. But yeah, it was the first time I had experienced that, but it wasn't necessarily like, oh, I think my neighborhood is going to be leveled and the house I live in is going to be gone. It wasn't quite that.
And of course, for anybody who lives in Southern California, one always has a sense that this is at least a remote possibility. But, of course, nobody could have possibly foreseen what was going to unfold in the last few weeks. So tell us about the very first indications that there was a very serious problem that many of you were going to be facing. And I suspect there were hints of this even before the actual eruption of the Eaton fire, which I think began kind of officially on January 7th. But what were the first indications of something dangerous afoot?
Well, before I answer that, I do just kind of want to elaborate a little bit more on what we were just talking about. I will say, so my wife is from Southern California. She grew up in the suburbs in Thousand Oaks. And there's a lot of wilderness around. And my mother-in-law still lives in the same house that my wife grew up in. So I would say I was definitely influenced by marrying and living with someone from Southern California, where, like, all these things you might read about from afar, earthquakes, wildfires. For my wife, it was like, yeah, those are things that happen, but I've been here my entire life. I've been here 48 years. And I've lived, you know, there's a hiking trail near my mother-in-law's house that, I mean, there's been fires out there before. So I think I was definitely influenced, and not in a wrong or misguided way, but I think there, even when it comes to earthquakes, it's just like, they happen. But It's such an abstract concept that you're just never, it's kind of like, well, we're here, we're just going to go about our lives. So you don't, like, think about it that much. I started thinking more about the wildfires for a lot of reasons, especially because we moved into a house that was up in the foothills, but it was still kind of an abstract concept to us, to me. But so your previous question there, So everything happened on Tuesday the 7th. The previous week, I want to say around Wednesday or Thursday of the previous week, we started to get messages from Southern California Edison, and the news started talking about. There was chatter and warnings about next week there's going to be significant fire risk and the Santa Ana winds are going to be crazy. But again, I've heard that for the last 20 years. So it's just one of those things where you hear it so often that it does kind of just go into the background. But I, you know, my wife and I were talking about it, again, because of where we had lived in that house in Altadena for about 2 years. And before that, we had owned a house in Pasadena, very close to the Altadena border. So we were familiar with the area and, you know, essentially the risk. So we started talking about it and we're like, yeah, we should, you know, pay attention. We should be on top of things. And then that Monday, so I guess that's January 6th, the middle of the night Monday, the winds started kicking up, and they were insane. I mean, we've experienced Santa Ana winds before, and they can be intense, but this was like a hurricane. The winds were like, they woke everyone, the animals. We have two cats and a dog. Our daughter woke up in the middle of the night. Our daughter was freaked out. Everyone ended up in our bed, and it was just kind of like, it was the first kind of moment we noted, like, okay, this is pretty intense, and it's starting now.
Right. And I should just add, I mentioned to somebody about the wind advisory that we've been under here in southeastern Wisconsin, where there have been some sustained winds of 40 miles per hour, which were very, very significant and even caused power outages and so on. But the winds you are talking about dwarf that. I mean, we're maybe talking about winds twice as strong as that.
Yeah. 4 hours. Happening for hours. So my wife, she typically wakes up, she's up and out of the house first. And she gets to school before Maggie gets to school, and then I get up and I get Maggie to school. So Bridget went to school. She texted me, and she'll periodically, for whatever reason, she'll send me a text on her way to school or when she gets to school about something pertinent that morning. And she was just like, I can't believe I just drove into school. I can't believe I haven't canceled school. I can't believe that there's power Like, this is insane. These winds are insane. I got Maggie to school. She was definitely a little freaked out by the wind. And I just said, well, you know, this has happened before. We're just going to be vigilant, and it's going to be okay. Don't worry. Get her to school. I started my work day. I work since COVID. I work from home. And I'm working on a game show right now. So I started my work day on this particular show. We have about 15 people or more that work in the editing department on this show, and we're all over LA. And we have a morning meeting, then we have an afternoon meeting, and we have check-in, you know, there's text messages, phone calls throughout the day. And there were members of our crew that were in or around the Palisades. So the morning meeting, and I don't know what time the Palisades fire started. I don't think it had started yet when we had our morning meeting, but it was a topic of conversation, like, these winds are crazy. And I believe there was a fire and evacuation somewhere on the west side a few weeks ago as well. It was a small fire, and they got it under control. So as the day went on, people on the show started checking in and saying, oh, I lost my power, so I can't work. And then the Palisades fire erupted, and we're all kind of following that. And then there's people at work saying, like, oh, I'm not far from that. I don't know if I'm going to have to get evacuated. I started that morning getting, I got maybe 3 or 4 updates from Southern California Edison warning us that we are going to likely shut off your power. And for me, it was like, great. That seems like a smart thing to do. Shut it off anytime. Like, my work isn't going to care. I'm not going to care. And by the winds, actually, for about an hour or so, the winds died down. And I took my dog. We go hiking in the hills, mountains behind the house. It's an amazing, the Altadena is a beautiful place with these beautiful hills and mountains where you can go and hike for hours. So when the wind dipped down, I took my dog for a walk up in the hills, and we could see the Palisades fire. Even though it's 30 miles away, we're way up in the hills, and you can see everything. You can see downtown L.A. You saw the fire off in the distance. But the wind had died down, and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe we'll be okay. Get back home, and then shortly after I got home, the winds kicked up again, even more intensely than they were. Like, I have no idea what the mile per hour was, but it was certainly above 60, if not 80 or more. We have a friend who lived down the hill in Pasadena, about 10 minutes away. He keeps a spare key with us. So he was going in, there's a hardware store near our house, which also was, the hardware store had been there for 80 years. Like, everything in Altadena and in Pasadena has been there. It's one of the things we appreciated about where we lived, the rich history, like, especially in Altadena, almost all of it was like small business, and it's been and stuff that's been there for decades. This hardware store had been there for 80 years. It was like a staple of the community. It's family owned. And our friend, it's like, hey, I've got to go get a new key made. I'm going to drop it off at your house. And he was just 10 minutes down the mountain, the hill, essentially, in Pasadena. He gets up to Altadena, and a giant dumpster, like a big metal, like, dumpster, the wind knocked it out of place, and it went rolling down the street and almost, like, took him out.
Wow.
And he called me. He's like, oh, I'm coming to your house now. And he's just like, I guess the wind was more intense up where we were because we were on the side of the mountain, and the wind picked up speed coming over. As I understand it, and don't quote me on this, as I understand it, it picks up speed and comes down the mountain, and it gets really fast. And he was just like, yeah, it's not quite this bad where I am in Pasadena. He was, like, kind of surprised and still in shock from almost being run over by a giant metal dumpster. And at that point, Maggie and Bridget came home from school early. They were home already because the power went out. They finally cut the power and lock in the autumn. So they came home early. My wife was having a horrible migraine, and I was actually having a somewhat busy day at work. So I couldn't really help much with our daughter. And I went back to work, but I remember thinking, why hasn't the power company shut off our power? Like, these winds, and there's power, like, you can see the power lines in the hills behind our house. There are transmission lines right there, and everyone knows a lot of these wildfires start, so it was definitely in my mind. I'm like, why haven't they turned off the power? Could they turn off the power? I don't care right now. Go ahead and do it, please. And so that was around 3 or 4. Around 6, my wife's migraine had become so bad. She's like, I'm out. Go lay down. And I had to, I had a later meeting that day, and I had more work going on. So I called my friend Nick back and just said, hey, can you drive back up to the house and just help me with Maggie, help me get her through dinner into bed, because I had to go do another Zoom meeting and do this and that. And he's like, yeah, no problem. In that 10 minutes, so this was around 6:15. In those 10 minutes, I got an alert that there was a fire in Eden Canyon. And Eden Canyon is a few miles. It all connects. It's all kind of wilderness hiking trails area. It connects to the trails behind our house, but it's about two or 4 miles away. But it was close enough where I'd been watching the Palisades all day, and I knew what the wind was like. And just based on that alert, I went into Bridget, into our bedroom, and I just said, we're going. We're out. There's a fire in Eden Canyon. We didn't have an evac order. I didn't care. My anxiety that whole day was, if something happens, I have to get 2 cats, a dog, an 8.5-year-old child, and both of our cars, because we didn't want to lose a car, both of our cars out of here as quickly as possible.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
In the 10 minutes it took, our friend Nick showed up thinking, I'll hang out with Maggie. And then I opened the door. I'm like, we got to go. There's a fire. He's like, what? We're out. Fire in Eden Canyon. Richard and Nick initially were like, okay, are you sure? I'm like, yes. I'm pretty sure. And then there was an alert. Like, I think the local NBC affiliate then sent out an alert, and I show them that. And I'm like, yeah, see, fire. And they said, okay. So we packed a little bit. What's funny is that afternoon, our daughter just heard me and my wife talking about this. So she had already packed like 3 bags at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
So for she was just probably the most prepared.
Wow. For just such an eventuality. Gosh.
Yeah. She this little ears that hear everything. She's just like, what? Fire? Evacuation? And we're like, well, we maybe just settle down. she's the one packing. I didn't. And in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, why didn't I start packing then? So yeah, we got everyone together. Both my wife and I had already had in the back of our brains, like, in this sort of situation, it's like, yeah, you get in a car, we split everything up between the 2 cars, and then we just go.
And what did you walk out the door with? I mean, obviously some clothing and toiletries and so on. Anything beyond that?
No, not. My wife and daughter did a slightly better job than I did. I grabbed my daughter's school backpack. I grabbed the bag she packed. We had just been at my mother-in-law's for a weekend, so I had a suitcase, like a little strap bag that had some clothes. I didn't grab much. I didn't grab many clothes. I grabbed my backpack that had my laptop and a few other things, but in hindsight, there was a few more things I wish I had grabbed. Well, and I did end up briefly going back to the house after this initial evacuation. My wife grabbed a bunch of clothes. But then, you know, the focus was just like, well, we got to get these 2 cats and cat carriers. And that was a little challenging at first. But we had our friend there who helped. And then the initial thought was to drive down into Pasadena and reconnect at Nick's apartment and figure it out from there. There was a thought that, oh, maybe we'll just sleep tonight at Nick's place, even though we'll be jammed in there. But as we were driving, we actually started to see how relatively close the fire was. And I think it did appear closer than it was at that moment, but we saw the billowing smoke in the orange sky. And then we got to the intersection of Wapello and Lake, and you're right near a park entrance, and you're right at the top of the hill, and it looked scary and intense. And then Nick called me from his car and said, hey, you know, my apartment's actually a little bit closer to where that fire is. I don't know if we can go there. I think I have to evacuate. And then either Bridget called me or I called her, and she was just like, yeah, we got to get out of here. You're 100% right.
I just wanted to ask, when you left your house, how fearful were you that your house was going to be consumed by this fire? Did it feel like the departure was more of a precautionary move, or did it feel like you were running for your lives? Or did that only become clear after you had departed and saw the sight that you just described?
I did not feel, I don't think any of us felt like we were running for our lives. However, I think in my head, it was like, these winds are going everywhere. In my head, it's like, yeah, it's very likely that our house is going to be gone tomorrow, but let's just get out. We went to my mother-in-law's house. It's like, in my head, it was like, yeah, that's a likely scenario. I think for Bridget, she was like, yeah, we'll get to my mom's house and we'll just ride this out and let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is scary, but they might get that under control. But it was the wind. I mean, I knew in the moment, I'm just like, this wind is intense. And my assumption was they weren't going to be able to do aerial drops. And the wind was erratic and all over the place. When we were leaving, there were embers and ash already coming like over our house. And I started texting. I was talking with one of our direct neighbors who was out to dinner. And then she's like, oh, yeah. Well, what are you guys doing? Like, we're leaving. You should leave now. So like, well, I have to get back to the house first, and I'll start getting ready. And I'm like, just go. And I was texting with some other neighbors. And there was, I think, a lot of people I was texting in the neighborhood at that moment were like, well, let's just see what happens. But it was once we got to Lake, that main thoroughfare, and we saw the hillside, I think all three of us were like, oh yeah, this is real. We got to get out of here. But it wasn't, I think, the assumption like all of El Cadena was going to burn. We got to my friend's apartment and he said, yeah, I have to evacuate. I'm going down. His girlfriend lives in Orange County. So he just went down there. And then I realized I had my daughter in my car with the cats, and I think my wife had her dog. So we got out on the sidewalk and we're talking, and we could see the fire growing. Like, it grew from when we drove down the hill. And the wind was still 80 miles an hour. I realized I have this mouth guard apparatus for my sleep apnea that, I can't live without. And I realized I left it behind, and I said that out loud. And I said, well, I'll just have to run back and get that. And my daughter lost her mind. She's like, you're not going back there. I'm like, yeah, sure, you're right. I'm not. You're right. That's crazy. Get in your mother's car, and I'll go see you at grandma's house. And then I immediately went back there and grabbed it. And when I went back up the hill, my sister was on the phone with me at that point. And she was like, are you sure you need to go back and get that? And I said, yeah, I really should have that, especially if my house burns down. But the vibe up there was different. Like, there were people now streaming out. There were cars coming down the hill. There was pockets of the neighborhood that clearly had their power cut. I could see, even going back up, you could see the fire growing when you would ever catch a glimpse of the hillside. And
I'd like to ask real quick, as you are making your way around and you've made reference to different bits of information that you were gathering, you know, as you're in a sense on the run, what were the most important sources of information? I mean, Were you listening to the radio? Were you on Facebook? Were you on Neighborhood Watch? I mean,
no.
How were you getting information about where the, or were you? Right. Was it possible?
The first bits of information were from calling and texting neighbors, and then our house had a Ring camera on it, and the Ring cameras have a sort of like social networking component where you can post a message. It's like kind of like Nextdoor, but for the Ring camera. So that's where I first heard about the fire, and that's where I was kind of getting updates of people saying, because people are just posting from wherever they are in Altadena, and people are saying, oh, this looks terrifying, or I'm in this neighborhood and the evacuation has started here. It wasn't till we got out to my mother-in-law's house in Thousand Oaks that I started to, like, I downloaded Watch Duty. Again, all from the Ring camera kind of messaging component. People there were saying, oh, download Watch Duty, do this, do that. And then once I got Watch Duty, and when we got to my mother-in-law's house, we were just then watching local news coverage. And there was a, I forget which channel, but they had people on the street in Altadena, and we sadly had to watch our city burn.
Wow.
Overnight.
Wow. Remind us again of where your mother-in-law lives. I mean, where were you, and how safe did you feel there?
We were in Thousand Oaks, so that's about an hour away from Los Angeles, an hour away from our part of Los Angeles. We felt safe. You know, the first thing my wife said was, well, you know, there could be a fire there. I mean, that week with the winds, there could have been a fire, and there were fires that popped up. There could have been a fire anywhere in L.A. Hmm. But, yeah, we felt safe because there was no active fire. The winds weren't that bad out there, and it was at least – it was far enough away from the fire we just fled, and it was far enough away from the Palisades fire. So we felt safe, and it was – my mother-in-law's house, especially for our daughter, is essentially a second home. She has her own bedroom there. She has her own set of clothes and some toys. So, like, regardless of proximity to fire or conditions, it just felt safe. It just felt like, okay, this is a good place to be. My daughter was definitely concerned because she would just hear everything over those first few days. She's like, is there going to be a fire here? And we try to respect her intelligence, so we don't go the route of like sugarcoating things sometimes, for better or worse. So we're like, maybe, but you know, if there is, we'll do the same thing we just did. We'll make sure all humans and animals get out safely and go somewhere safe. So, you know, we just need to be prepared, because she would hear us talking about, we talked to my mother-in-law, like, okay, if something does pop up in Thousand Oaks, what's your procedure to get ready and get out? And my daughter would hear that, and then start getting nervous, and we'd just say, look, we're just trying to be prepared.
Right, of course, of course. At what point did you receive confirmation, or at what point were you all but certain that your house had been consumed by this terrible fire that swept through Altadena?
It was the next morning. Well, so once we got to Thousand Oaks, we're watching the news and we're seeing that, and it doesn't look good. I was just monitoring the Ring app and Watch Duty, and I was up till about 2:30 in the morning. I was kind of getting a sense. There was a moment, and I was texting with a couple neighbors that hadn't left. There was this one moment where it seemed like maybe West Altadena, where we were, might be okay, but at the same time, I knew, and even the friends I was texting, it's like, this wind can just, it doesn't matter. Like, this wind can just decide to go in a direction 2 hours from now. When I went to bed at 2:30, pardon me, when I went to bed at 2:30, there was some concerning things I was reading on the Ring app. People on the ground saying, so Lake Street is a big thoroughfare that kind of divides East and West Altadena, and our house was on the west side of Lake. There were more kind of anecdotal reports of, oh, I hear this house is on fire now, and this is the address, or like just reports of like it's starting to cross Lake. So I just got to a point like I have to go to sleep, and at that moment I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to wake up, and our house is gone. We had about 2 hours that morning where we didn't know for sure. I was, like, reading what people were saying on the app, and I had seen, by the time I woke up, our neighborhood, our direct part of West Altadena had the level 3 evacuation order, which basically means your neighborhood's on fire. You shouldn't be here. You know, then my wife and mother-in-law are having conversations about how, you know, honestly, at this point, it's probably in our best interest that our house is gone, because it seems like all of Altadena has just burned down overnight. So what value is there in our having, like, one of those random houses that's still standing around mass destruction? And then some of our neighbors, we were on a text thread. We had this little private road offshoot, went up a little hill, and we were at the end of a cul-de-sac. There's 8 houses on our street. And we had about half those families we knew, some better than others. One of our neighbors had started a street thread, text thread, so we could all start communicating. And somebody, one of the neighbors, drove up and took video and took photos. And we knew maybe by like 10 o'clock we saw our house. And we saw one house at the bottom of the street survived, and the other 7 were just completely gone. I mean, it looks like, it's like Dresden is what Altadena looks like. It's just like a bomb went off and it's all gone.
Right. And in so many cases, we're talking about houses and other structures that were all but evaporated. I mean, where in many cases, essentially nothing is even left standing. So in the midst, in the immediate aftermath of knowing that, what is the first thing you do? I mean, what is the first agency you call? I mean, particularly, I mean, it's one thing when an individual family suffers a tragic fire that destroys their home.
Yeah.
And but you are surrounded, one hopes, by concerned neighbors and a community that is there to help. But something like this is completely different, because this is one tragic disaster multiplied by thousands, and with the entire community almost entirely devastated. So what was involved then in those next few steps, and did you know what to do? I mean, since you'd never been through this before.
Sure. Well, the joke for the first few days between my wife and I was like, this is what my ADHD was designed for. I was like in like crisis mode, but in a way where I wasn't, and my wife wasn't either, but I think I had more of a capacity to just kind of like my, again, with my, and I have ADHD, like everything for me is like 1,000 spinning plates at once. And it's like, oh, I can handle this. I have to like jump and manage everything right now. It kind of felt like what my brain was designed for. So it was, you know, it was community. I mean, at first it was talking, you know, it was talking to neighbors, using the Ring app and just seeing what people are talking about and experiencing firsthand. I think that first day I called, not knowing exactly how everything worked, because I hadn't been through something like this, but I called our insurance agent, the salesman who sold us the policy, and he answered right away, which shocked me. And he also, like, his office was near our the area, so his office, like, they were evacuated from their office. His home was in Sierra Madre, which also the fire got into Sierra Madre, so he was kind of experiencing the same thing.
Wow.
But he was like, yeah, I'm here. But he's like, I'm answering the phone. I'm doing my job. And he just, you know, he was just like, start a claim, go on, you know, get on your app and start your claim. And so that was the first thing I signed up for. I did the claim, I think, that Wednesday. And I think I signed up for FEMA that Thursday. And I just started talking to people. This has been huge for us. I have a vast network. I just know a lot of people. I have lots of friends from living in the Midwest, from out here, that are all over the place. So it's just, you know, David's son, Tony, has been a huge, huge, and our uncle, Brian, have been a huge resource. Tony, from the very beginning, their lawyers giving me guidance saying you should do this, do that. So I have a friend that works for the National Forestry Service in communications, and he's in New Mexico. He's a friend from L.A., but from the get-go, he's texting me like, hey, I work in wildfires now. Like, he was a writer in L.A., and now he's a spokesperson for the Forestry Service in New Mexico. So he was like, from the get-go, he's like, I'm watching the fires. I'm on top, you know, call me. I'll call you, whatever you need. I'll start giving you advice. Because he's like, you know, if there's a wildfire in New Mexico, he'd be one of the people out at a press conference. So I just had a lot of people and a lot of people that knew what they were talking about right from the get-go to say, here's what you need to be focused on. Right. And we're very fortunate. I'm incredibly lucky that I had that resource. And then I just, doing lots of research. I don't know. Again, my brain went into survival mode from the get-go. Because I did kind of assume when we were driving away Tuesday night, like, well, our house is going to be gone. And a lot of houses are going to be gone. So I just started researching, Googling everything I could about insurance and wildfires. And then the friends and family that I have started contacting me and kind of using them.
So I guess one of the questions that confronts you and everyone else touched similarly by this devastating fire is, do we rebuild? Where do we rebuild? How do we rebuild? Now, are you already on the other side of making some of those basic choices, or are those decisions that still have to be made?
Those are decisions that will need to be made that are not made yet that we are trying to figure out. Obviously difficult, but something that I definitely want to kind of talk about is Altadena, because it was an incredibly special place. And there's a lot of whoever is listening to this, whatever you might read or hear about Altadena, it is all true. And we've been talking to a lot of people in the community. And that was one of the things that we loved about Altadena, is it was a very close-knit community. And everyone did really know each other. If it wasn't like I directly knew someone, it's like, well, someone I'm close with knows this person, and we're all talking. We certainly want to rebuild Altadena, but unfortunately, I think there's going to be some challenges. We don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know if it's going to, reading about other wildfires that aren't even at this scale in this kind of urban environment, it's going to take years. And it's not just Altadena, like the Palisades have to get rebuilt. Everything's got to get rebuilt all at once. And I don't know. I mean, in the first kind of week, everyone you talk to is like, yeah, we're rebuilding, we're coming back. And it's not that sentiment is not there, but there's more all of us kind of realizing, like, oh yeah, that's what that means. Like, we have a mortgage. Everyone has mortgages still, that forbearance or not, you have interest accruing and you have a payment that will be due. And the prospect of, if you're going to rebuild, it's going to take however many years, and you still have to pay your mortgage and presumably pay rent somewhere. And just how long is it going to take to build an entire town? It's really, and I've done it. We've gone to the property. We've driven around Altadena. There are pockets. There are these random, there's a house for some reason, or there's like half a street, but I don't know what the actual percentage is, but to say like Altadena is 90% gone certainly seems accurate. Wow. And how is that going to get rebuilt in a timely fashion? I just don't know. So we have to look at all our options. So I don't know. I don't know. I think the desire is to certainly, yeah, that was where we loved living. We'd like to live there again, but I just don't know.
Right. And of course, in a sense, at the moment, there's no there. I mean, the Altadena that you loved so much, in a sense, does not exist, at least not in the way that it did. And what the new Altadena will look like and be remains to be seen. Your wife is a school teacher. Is school back in session somehow? Is she teaching again? Is your daughter going to school? How is that being handled?
So the fire didn't quite get into La Cañada. I think I got closer, just got into the hills up the way high uphill. So the school that my wife teaches at that Maggie goes to was unaffected. I think they had about a week and a half off. And then Maggie went back as soon as school opened up. Combination of just trying to get back to normal and we just needed childcare. Bridget didn't go back to school until yesterday. They gave her, I think she might still have a few days that she can use later, but they gave her some time off. There are schools in Altadena. I mean, we're lucky. We're fortunate. We know other friends who their kids aren't back at school. The school's gone, or the school's there, but it needs to be properly cleaned, and they don't know. They're sort of in limbo. Some families we know, their kids are getting absorbed by other schools nearby in like La Cañada or Glendale or Eagle Rock. One family we saw over the weekend, their son goes to school in Sierra Madre. There was some stuff burned in Sierra Madre, but I think Miles' school is still there. They're just waiting for it to get cleaned. Mm-hmm. But yeah, school for us. Yeah, that's I think great for our daughter. It's kind of, she's back to normal in that sense. So,
and probably welcomes at least a bit of normalcy in otherwise a life that is so completely upturned. Are you back to work at least to any extent?
The show that I work on has been incredibly kind and gracious, and I am still working, but I have been given a lot of flexibility with my days as to what I can do. They're just like, you still have a job, just go figure out what you need to do with your family right now. I work freelance though, so I don't know. You know, I was actually coming towards the end of my time on the show. I don't know. I do need to check in with them this week. But I have been, you know, they've been very accommodating in such an amazing way. It's also kind of part of my job. I don't always have a job. So for right now I'm working, and I think I do have something lined up later in the spring. So I kind of have, I'm fortunate that I kind of have the time to now do the heavy lifting on dealing with insurance and what we're doing next. And my wife can go back to work and my daughter can go back to school, and I can kind of focus on that for right now.
And just to clarify, where is it that you are living now, and how long do you suspect you will be continuing to live there?
We've been bouncing around. We were at my mother-in-law's, which is just too far away from the school that my wife works at and my daughter goes to. So we have had a lot of families very kindly offer us whatever they can in terms of, and families that are either direct close friends or families we just know in the school. You know, we have an ADU, we have which is an additional dwelling unit, which is very popular in LA. It could be a converted garage, it could be just an extra little structure on the property. We have a couple close families, they just have room in their house. So we've kind of bounced around. One family in particular from our school has a back house that they use for family when they come into town that we're in right now. So we're a little nomadic, but we have places we can kind of hop around for right now as we kind of figure out what we need to do. The house we're in right now is very comfortable. We have our dog with us. The cats are with my mother-in-law. So we're kind of situated for a few weeks, and then we have to figure out, we're just trying to figure out how we get through the school year and then what we do in summer. But right. we are very, very fortunate. We've just had a ton locally outside of LA. We have had so many friends and family just step up in a way that's amazing. And we are, all things considered, are so taken care of right now.
Hmm.
The long term is what's cloudy and what we're trying to figure out.
Sure. A last quick question. For those of us from far away who feel such concern for the folks of Southern California and feel like we want to help, from your vantage point, what is most helpful to people in the region? What is most needed in terms of what people from other parts of the country might perhaps be able to offer?
I suppose, honestly, bluntly, probably financial assistance. Look for GoFundMes that aren't well funded. I don't know, see what sort of legitimate relief funds there are, if you want to contribute that way. You know, I know, like, the first thought was, like, these sort of closed drives, which have happened and are happening. But I know locally there was a saturation point where it's, like, there was donation centers that were just starting to say, like, we can't accept any more donations.
Right.
Too many donations. And I will not speak for every family in this situation. For us, it was kind of like, we're okay right now. We don't need clothes. We just need to gift cards are great, and we need to figure out where we can live. But accumulating stuff wasn't necessarily what we needed. I can't speak for every family, though, in this situation. But, yeah, I mean, if there's anything to do, it's that kind of stuff. I know I have seen that, I don't know exactly how to find it, but I have seen people post about, like, there's definitely some families out there that at one point their GoFundMes weren't really well funded, and there were some that were. So, like, maybe if you come across somebody's GoFundMe that they lost their home and they don't have a lot in their GoFundMe, you can donate there. And I don't know. Yeah, and maybe there's other relief funds you can look at.
Well, Frank McGrath, I so appreciate you taking the time from your challenging circumstances in what I'm sure is a busy day to offer up the story of just one family touched by these devastating fires. And you've done a lot to enlighten all of us, again, watching these events from afar and trying to understand what you and others have experienced. We certainly wish you only the very, very best going forward from here. And thank you again for your time.
Yeah,
very best
yeah,
wishes
course,
to
no
you
problem.
And your family.
Thank you. Thank you.
In a brief follow-up interview, I asked Frank McGrath about the infrastructure of Altadena. He reemphasized that roughly 80 to 90% of Altadena was utterly destroyed by the fire. Although there is some electricity restored, there is no gas, no potable water, so that even if one's home was spared by the fire, it is all but impossible to live there now. Frank and his family continue to mourn not only the loss of their home, but the loss of their beloved community. And it's hard to say at this point to what extent Altadena can be restored. By the way, there is a GoFundMe for Frank McGrath and his family, and we share a link for that in the Morning Show archive on our website, WGTD.org. And to hear this interview in unabridged fashion, go to the podcast version of The Morning Show. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Tomorrow's Morning Show has to be changed. But on Thursday, I know that we will be previewing the Lakeside Players production of the lovely musical Anastasia, which opens this weekend at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. A sunny day ahead of us today and colder than it's been, with a high today of just 25 degrees. Temperatures will remain pretty steady overnight with a low of 23. Cloudy tomorrow with a 30% chance of rain, freezing rain, snow mix, with tomorrow's high 33 degrees. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and